Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Sanjay Touré, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this will be a fun one.
Yeah, definitely.
Got a lot of smart ladies in the room here.
Right.
So what'd you do this weekend?
What did I do this weekend? I went to a karaoke bar. It was really fun.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. How'd that go?
It went well. I sang.
What's your go-to? Nice.
My go-to is usually Ashanti. I love like the 1990s, late 90s R&B. Yeah.
And you were a big hit?
Not really. No one was really listening to me, so...
Well, I got to go to, it was Business Radio X night at the Atlanta Gladiators hockey game. So our Gwinnett studio partner invited us over there and we got to go in the suite and have a whole
I'm kind of upset that I didn't get an invite, but hey.
You were doing karaoke.
Exactly.
I didn't want to infringe on that. Well, that was fun, but it won't be as fun as what we're going to do in here. Today, we have a great show. We have Melissa Smith with the PVA, and she'll be talking about the Association of Virtual Assistants. And we also have Vicki Hamilton with VWH Consulting. We're going to start off with Melissa. Welcome.
Thank you. It's glad to be back.
Well, it seems like you come every year.
Yeah, we got something new.
Annually, you come in and talk about something new. Mm-hmm. And tell us first about the Association of Virtual Assistants. How does that group work and how do you serve folks?
So this is the 1 week official launch of the Association of Virtual Assistants. We're super excited. This has been a dream of mine to launch such an association for many years, and it just wasn't the right timing before, and it is absolutely the right timing now. So we launched about a week ago, and we already have over 40 members from 7 different countries, all the way from to Australia, Dubai, Belize, Canada, the Indies. It's just amazing to see virtual assistants joining and feeling so much value and getting so much resources from the group, as well as really elevating the level of what a virtual assistant does and who we serve, and really starting to work on what industry standards, what certifications we're going to be creating. So all of our founding members are going to be a part of that. Very exciting.
Now, you've been in the virtual assistant space for a little bit, right?
Yes.
Minute or two?
I have been. Not as long as some, but I hit it with a vengeance for sure. And I made it my mission because my background's in executive assisting and I was an executive assistant for 15 years. And when I got into the virtual assistant space, it was just so different. So different. And there were not the same kind of industry standards as there are in executive assistants. I mean, I went to secretary school way back when. It was actually a career path. My mom was an assistant. So not having those things and one like really unified body have always been something that I wanted to create. And so I started out with my first book, which I just recently revised and expanded, Hire the Right Virtual Assistant. And that was really to teach people how to hire the right virtual assistant. What does that mean? What does that look like? Because it's not the same as your in-person office assistant. You don't need the same kind of services. Typically, you don't need the same amount of hours. What makes a good virtual assistant is not the same what makes a good executive assistant. So it really was really educating all over again. And then from there, virtual assistants reached out to me and they're like, how are you doing this? What are you doing? How can I do this too? Or I'm struggling. And that really became my second book and my online course. And I had a virtual summit on how to become a successful virtual assistant. And then I just, please just started growing it. It just never was anything else on my radar. And the timing was right this past year. And I just sent out this email to all of the VAs I knew. And I said, who wants to change the virtual assistant industry with me? Because the association would not be good if it was just me. Right. I already have a company.
Right.
I needed other women. I needed diverse backgrounds. I needed different levels of thinking. I need people to challenge me. I needed to see different perspectives. We needed to reach women and VAs and men who were at all different stages of their career, their life, their backgrounds. And we've done that. And I think the biggest thing for me is I knew we were hitting something that was needed and that was going to be great. And I thought the biggest thing was I was going to be so excited because people were actually trying to break our systems to get into the association early. I'm like, oh my gosh, we got to get this in place. We have to make, people are trying to get in through the back door. Like, let's open this up. And I thought that was going to be the most exciting when I started seeing those people like enter into our system online after paying. But actually what was most exciting was to see the diversity in the group from people of color, from age, from background, different races, different countries, different stages in their career. That was amazing because it was something that we were not necessarily intentional about in our wording, but we were intentional saying we want everyone to feel welcome here. And they came. And I thought, this is the most beautiful thing for me because so many companies, they go out and they're trying to, you know, purposefully hire people and, you know, to get their numbers up. And here we are attracting the right people. So that means we're doing something right at our core. And that's really what will help us grow in the future as well.
Now, let's talk about some of the, just the nuts and bolts of virtual assistanting. Mm-hmm. Assistanting. What is it called?
Assisting
virtually. Let's talk about assisting virtually. Mm-hmm. Now, we have a lot of scar tissue here, Business Radio X, because we've tried multiple virtual assistants. Mm-hmm. And in my head, as the client, mm-hmm. I am believing in the mission of, oh, someone's going to be able to magically take all this stuff off of my shoulders and it'll make my life easier. But the onboarding has been very difficult for us. And I think it's partially because I'll take responsibility for us not being good communicators and having good clarity in messaging. But some of it is that the virtual assistant, I think, takes a I can do everything approach, and they overpromise maybe what in actuality can be delivered. Mm-hmm. So how do you help the virtual assistant not do that? And how do you help the client you know, kind of maybe chunk out the work in the smaller doses so that they can get an effective result?
So the first thing I always do is start with a consultation and really find out what is the communication strategy and what is the ideal client fit. So the communication strategy is what's super easy for you. It's in your manner, your medium, your tone, your verbiage. If you're walking through the grocery store and you forgot something, how would you contact your assistant to say, hey, put this on my calendar, or I need to get this done.
Or just yell real loud.
Yeah. I mean, how does that, you know, look like? And the ideal client fit is actually for the virtual assistant. So you should have a business they actually created their business for. And that's usually where it goes wrong, right there.
Oh, so that they're not being kind of niche and being specialist?
Correct. So you can have a lot of different skills, but you can't serve a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work that way naturally. And niching is very hard, especially if you're coming from an executive assistant background, because right. as an executive assistant, you are the Jack or Jill of all trades.
Right.
And it's kind of going from like the ER to the ear, nose, and throat
right.
when you go from executive assistant to virtual assistant. And so what I do with my clients is I really make sure that this person knows their skill strengths. And in many times, I can't match a VA unless they've been in the business for at least 2 years, because then I know that they've gone through and really gotten their niche down.
They've honed in their niche. Because like if somebody's good with accounting people, right, and their process and their kind of accounting nerds and they know all the ins and outs of accounting, and then you go, okay, now you're working with an advertising agency that's like creative and, you know, throwing all this stuff at them, that may not work no matter how good they are with accountants, right?
Correct. And it really does come down to, again, the communication strategy and the ideal client fit. Like those are the two key factors that people get wrong all the time. I mean, it's literally how I make my money. And one of the reasons it comes across as like, well, I think it can be done, is because people are looking at each other's backgrounds. People aren't really getting serious about what they want. But the other part of what I do is I can say like, look, this service, you actually need three people. You would need a team, or you need two separate people. Like this person is not going to be that person. And a lot of times they need me to tell them that, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to hire one person to do all the things. And it just doesn't work that way. And you know, there's not that's not to say that you can't hire a team to do all the things, but the other problem is by the time people hire a virtual assistant, they're already in the hole.
Right.
So then they're trying to back out and they're trying to do things too quickly. And instead of just saying, okay, we're going to tackle this, we're going to build this foundation, we're going to have our communication strategy, we're going to like really get our rhythm down, because that's the other thing you have to get when you're working with a virtual assistant. You have to get that rhythm and flow. I send it off, it gets done, we revise, we move back, and you just kind of go in this circle. And then you tack on like another brick to the foundation. Okay, now let's add this. Let's put this into our flow. But most people, they're like, okay, here's everything.
Like a fire hose.
Here's the, right. All my junk in the closet.
Fix it.
Fix it. And so more and more I'm having to match clients with teams because they have waited too long to hire a VA and now their business is just moving too fast. So they need to hire a team in order to keep up with all the different things, plus all the opportunities. Because that's the other thing. When you don't hire the right virtual assistant soon enough, you're actually not only delaying your processes and successes, you're actually delaying opportunity. So when people say, wow, you've done 3 books, traveled the world, you've done a summit, you created an association, you're creating another summit right now. Like, how are you doing all this? I take my own medicine. I have a team of virtual assistants.
Like how many virtual assistants?
I have 6.
6 virtual assistants doing different specific
doing different
activities.
At different times. I don't use them all the time. But the second I need one, I'm like, here, go fix this. Here, make this. Here's like, I have them on call. I use them like I would insurance. I have an emergency. I have this really quick, or I need this by the end of the week. I spend no time doing anything that is not client-based or relationship building. That's how I make my money. That's how I grow my businesses. That's my sweet spot. So anything that's, I mean, I don't do my own editing anymore. I don't do like my copy. I don't upload anything to any of my systems. That is not a good use of my time. And the time that takes for my assistants to do it, I mean, they do it faster than me anyways.
Right. Because that's all they're doing.
That's all they're doing.
So now how did you, like, what was the first assistant you
Bookkeeping.
Hired? Bookkeeping. Yeah. So that was your biggest concern.
Yes,
that
I
was
wanted
a nightmare.
That off my plate.
You know, you, and then so after you have the bookkeeping one, you didn't say, okay, you're good at bookkeeping. Also, edit my copy.
Yeah. No, I didn't do that.
Right. So then, so you had the bookkeeping kind of figured out and you're not doing bookkeeping anymore.
Nope.
You're just going, hey, assistant. Here's an invoice or whatever. And they're handling everything.
Yep.
Now, what was the second one?
The second one was my technical.
Like your website and...
The funnels on the back end, ConvertKit, uploading to Amazon for lead magnets, helping create copy.
So you didn't do any of that?
No.
So you just found an assistant that's good at that?
Absolutely.
And then you go, hey, this is what I'm trying to do.
Yes.
Go make
I'll create the first copy. So I'll write.
Like a draft.
Yeah. And then from there, I'm like, here, this is what I want the outcome to be.
Make it happen.
Make it happen. And then I send, and I communicate with my team. I'm like, here's, you know, this week on Wednesday, I'll send out an email because not all of them work together. So I send out an email to everybody. So everyone gets a complete overview. We make sure no one is doing duplicate work. And I said, this is my plan. This is my rough timeline. Let me know if you see any holes in it. Let me know if you see any duplications. And let me know if you have a better way of doing it. But this is my goal. This is the date. Let's go with it. Let me know if there's any problems.
And then they report back to you, or they say, you know what, I need the funnel person. I have to have talked to the copywriting person. Or are they handling it all themselves and you're not even touching it?
I'm pretty organized, so that never happens. They're like, okay. What I do get back is like, hey, this doesn't make sense. We're missing a step here. I need one more page of copy from you because there needs to be another drip in the funnel. Mm-hmm. Or like a different timeline doesn't work for the other person. So let's say for the email drip copies, because I'm thinking about my virtual summit coming up, they'll say, how many more do we have? I need to know how many more we have so I can plan it out. I need to know how many more, you know, it will affect the due date. And then from there, it's little questions. And it's great because they're super detailed things that are, I'm not
thinking really about right
thinking about anymore. So it's like, what font do you want? How do you want, how big do you want this to be? Like, how's this? And just really making it beautiful, because the idea is that I set the expectation of the feeling that I want my clients to have at the end. And so as they're going along, they're asking the details that I miss, because all I care about is the end result.
Outcome, right.
That's right.
And then how difficult is it to vet the assistant? Like to know, okay, I have an A player here. This isn't a B or C player.
It's actually pretty easy, because I come from the field and I know.
So you can smell that out pretty quickly.
So when I ask someone who is their ideal client and they can't tell me.
They're out. That's a red flag.
That's a huge red flag. And in my book, I list out, like, here are all the things like that should raise a red flag for you. Like when you're going through the interview process, when people are asking, when you're on their website, particularly men have a hard time looking if they're looking for virtual assistants online. Cause when they go to websites, more women are using virtual assistants than men from a business owner perspective. A lot of men are more typically going to other sites that are more less expensive, and they don't care that they're going to have to redo the work. More women are like, hey, I don't have time to redo the work. I need it right the first time. So let's get this done. So most VA sites are often geared toward more feminine look and feel. So there's also a section in there that says, you know, if you're getting this, it just means that they're probably attracting more women. It doesn't mean that they don't serve men, but there are VAs that don't. They particularly like to work with women. But in the book, and then I created a workbook this time, or actually my VA team did. And it walks you through all the steps. It's a complete interactive workbook. And it goes from here's why you need one. And it lists all the reasons. And you check the ones that are work for you. And then you go through the types of VAs. And then it walks you through how to create the right job description to attract the right person. It has a section to really look at the different proposals, go through all the questions to ask during the interview. It's a complete vetting process. It's what I use. But if you allow people to just talk and speak and have a conversation, they will tell you things that really are either pleasantly surprising or red flags. And the other thing that clients don't often do is allow their virtual assistant to conduct a consultation, because they're saying, like, I know what I need. I just need you here, yes or no. And that is the absolute wrong way to conduct an interview with a potential virtual assistant. You need to let them speak. And they will either say exactly the thing that you needed to hear, or they will say the exact thing that you know that you should not hire them. Because you could have a really stellar A-plus VA for one client, but that would fail for another client. And that's part of what I do as well, making sure that matching up the right person, the right type with the right client. You know, you want to make sure that someone understands your goals and missions as well. So many of my clients, they want to make sure that this person is LGBTQ friendly, believes in pro rights, is a fan of the law. You know, you don't want someone to work for you when they're like, oh no, I think lawyers are, you know, snakes. Right. You have to, that person has to believe in your mission as well. So these are all things that people just, you know, they're looking at a resume, they're looking at a CV, and that's not how you hire someone in a virtual world. Remote working at all.
So now you said that your background was an executive assistant.
Yes.
So you were kind of the right-hand person for an executive at one point.
Correct. I ended my career mostly in higher ed. So I was the dean, associate dean's assistant at the law school, the vet school, and then I went to a private independent school in California and was the assistant to the head assistant head of school. And that was always my sweet spot. The actual dean, they're doing a lot of meetings, canceling a lot of meetings or fundraising all the time. That wasn't really fun for me, but I found that associate and or assistant head of school position was my sweet spot.
And then in that role, you were very hands-on and like in the office adjacent or very close physically.
Absolutely.
Right. So that relationship was the person could yell your name and then you would come in and.
Right. But they didn't. We were working virtually even then.
So that was virtual at that time?
No, it wasn't. We were in the office, but we were working virtually.
Right.
I mean, they were traveling. Even if they were in the office, you're right, they could yell, but they would actually text me or IM me.
Right.
The same way people get a hold of me now.
Today, right. Yeah. So it doesn't matter that your office is adjacent. So now what about a transition from that person who in their head thinks that I need to see them every day.
I challenge them on their leadership skills. If you need to see someone in order to do their job, how good a leader are you? If my character is defined as what I am doing when no one is watching me, your leadership skills are defined about what your people or your employees are doing when you cannot see them.
And then, so if they're not there yet, how do you kind of coach them up to be better leaders in order to effectively use a virtual assistant?
So it really comes down to letting go.
You got to let go. Control issue.
Yeah, it's absolutely a control issue. It, you know, it's not about someone being as good as you are. I mean, do you have to be the best at creating this document? Do you have to be the best at, I don't even know the thing that people hold on to, like responding to, you know, emails this fast. I mean, is that why you were hired? And when we knock it down to what you were hired to do for this company, like you're doing all these other things and not the one thing you were hired to do. And, you know, I like to tell them, like, you know, you can treat the janitor with the same respect as you treat the CEO. But if you're the CEO doing the janitor's work, who's doing yours?
Right. So now, in this association, your mission was to just have a place for all these people to learn and to hang out and to help each other.
Well, the mission is to create the industry standards for the virtual assistant industry.
So right now it's free for all. There's no industry standards.
There's no one trusted source for industry standards. And that's why there's so much confusion. And there's not a lot of differentiation between, like, well, what makes a good virtual assistant? Why do I value this virtual assistant and pay him or her more than this virtual assistant over here? And there's no clear place, and there's not a really transparent source. And people are just putting out RFPs, requests for proposals. And, like, no one's looking behind, like, you know, the Great Curtain of Oz. You can't see, like, the wizard. And
because right now, so I could just say I'm a virtual assistant.
Right.
There's no...
That's right.
And credentialing. There's no... I don't have to take
no,
a test. Or,
there's no recognized certification. And that's a problem. That's a problem for me. It's a problem for virtual assistants everywhere who are highly skilled, who are good business owners, who know their stuff. And most of our time is spent in educating. And we educate new virtual assistants coming to the field as well. One of the problems is many virtual assistants, they are being coached to leave the field because people aren't valuing them. So when they get to a different level, someone's saying, oh, well, you know what? You should take out virtual assistant from your title so people will respect you more. And that's a problem for me because I will never remove assistant from my title. It is like part of who I am. So we're showing VAs as well, like there's a career path here. Like, I don't personally assist clients anymore. My job, I created it. Like, you can create your own job as well. And there is value in being an assistant. And when you go to search me on LinkedIn, most of the people who are searching me are not searching for a VA matchmaker, although that's what I do. They're not searching for me as an author, even though I've written 3 books. They're searching for me as a virtual assistant. So changing your title is... there is value in that. You shouldn't want to change your title. You should want to grow your career and be in the field that you love, because it's actually like conflicting to a lot of them. They're like, I don't actually want to change my title, but I do want to be valued. And so we're creating a place that says, look, there's a complete life cycle for a VA. And if you choose to leave the field, then we support you in that. But you shouldn't have to change your title because someone else told you you had to do so in order to be valued. So we're creating... mission to create the industry standards, not only for us, but for the client. So there can be transparency and the client can see, like, okay, these people have gone through the AVA Association certifications. Like, these are top notch. I can trust this. We give away our industry standard pricing. So now clients can go to our site and say, okay, these are industry standard pricings. These titles are the most common used. These are the people that use them. Here's some skills. Here's some things that these type of VAs do. And now we've started this dialogue. Our founding members who are joining right now are actually, we're going to work with them to say, what certifications do you want to create first? How do you want to start this? Where do you see the industry going? We're going to be polling clients and say, what matters to you in a certification? How many hours do you want to know this person put into it? How many references do you want? What makes that certification valuable to you to make sure that when we release it, it's really good? So we'll probably start out with three or four, and then eventually we'll have a mastery virtual certification, virtual assistant certification that includes a few specializations, but then an actual, like, I know how to run a virtual assistant business. I have a business plan in place. I have an emergency plan in place.
Which is different than being a virtual assistant.
Correct.
But that's part of the path.
That's part of the path. And because being a virtual business owner, there, it's, you know, you're not just being an assistant. You have to have, you have to know how to run a business. You have to know,
which is a different
not
skill.
Implode.
Right. Like, it's like one person wants to be a mechanic, and then running a mechanic's place is a different, those are different skills.
Right. And really, that's one of the things we're doing also to protect the client. And that's the other reason that this association needed to be created, because some of the virtual assistant places are created for the client. It's not to value the assistant at all. Other places have been created and they really value the assistant, but they don't take the client's perspective. Mm-hmm. And neither of those places are creating a win-win like
right.
situation. And if someone's, if both parties aren't winning, then someone's losing. And I don't like to work with losers.
Right.
So it's very important to me that everyone is winning. So in everything we're doing, we're not just saying, this is really great for the VA. We're saying, okay, this is really great for the VA. How can we also make it really great for the client? How do these two people come together like peanut butter and chocolate, mm-hmm. peas and carrots? How is this a win-win situation for everybody? So that's what we're doing.
And if an assistant out there wants to learn about the association, what's the coordinates?
Associationofvas.com.
And then if somebody wants to get a hold of the book, Hire the Right Virtual Assistant, or any of your books?
They're on Amazon.
So just go
Hire the Right Virtual Assistant, or become a successful mm-hmm. virtual assistant, both on Amazon.
And then the Hire the Right Virtual Assistant is for that person. Who is the profile of that? I know it could be anybody, but is it typically solopreneurs? Is it coaches? Who is the typical virtual assistant client?
You know, it's someone who just wants more time. Like, so if someone who just wants 5 hours back in their week, 5 hours back in their month, it really is anyone who wants to hire a virtual assistant. It's not a personal assistant. It's not someone's going to come to you, but there are tons of people who even still work. They're in a corporate job. They want to write a book on the side. They want to advance their career on the side. They see retirement in their future, but they're not ready to retire. So they want to start doing things now, but there's only so much time in the day and they right. don't want to take it away from their personal life or their family. They certainly don't want it to affect their work now. So there's a lot of people that are still working and haven't started their own company yet that are utilizing the services of a virtual assistant to help in their future. There's a lot of business owners now that have a lot of EAs, virtual executive assistants, that bridge the gap between both their business and their personal life. Mm-hmm. That's becoming more and more common because I don't really believe in work-life balance, and a lot of people aren't finding that either. And they're really trying to integrate their work and their life. So they're working on that. There's other people that say, you know, I have this side thing. I'm not sure how to get it off the ground. I want to make more passive income. So they may just need a virtual assistant for a one-off project. They may have no plans to use that virtual assistant in the future, but they want to create an ebook and they want to start doing some passive income with the ebook. So
there's virtual assistants that are available to do specialty work like that. Help me with a book, help me create sales funnels or marketing automation for my business. You can find specialists that help you on on a project basis.
Oh yeah, I love talking to new virtual assistants and finding new niches. And we have such a great group that joined the Association of Virtual Assistants. I have a VA now, and her name's Crystal Green, and she is your money making virtual assistant. She helps people make money off their blog. And not just like $25. We're talking thousands of dollars off their blog for affiliate links. Mm-hmm. And she was under the impression that this was not a valuable service for her to offer to help people, because in her circles, people know how to do this.
Right.
So they can do it themselves.
Right.
And so outside those circles, I'm like, are you kidding me? I myself have written over 150 blogs. And she's like, and you've never monetized that? She's like, oh, I know I can do this. I'm like, I can sell this all day long. And I thought, wow, if we can do this for blogs, then we could do this for podcasts. It's just huge. But she didn't think that that was a niche.
Right.
And I have another woman in the group, Marissa, and she does the best Pinterest. She does the best Pinterest, and she has services anywhere from like just the analysis, a startup package. She can do one-offs, or she has packages for like the starter who wants the monthly maintenance. If you have more that you're doing and you write so many blogs, and there's like the Pinterest Plus, or if you are like gung-ho on Pinterest, that's your place and you're already monetizing and you want to like take it to the next level and diversify even further, there's a she has a Pinterest Platinum, and she will take care of it. She does such a great job. It's so beautiful, because as someone who is not a huge fan of Pinterest but knows of the potential of Pinterest, the SEO just is not my friend. And you really have to have a specialist who understands that Pinterest is not just about pretty pictures,
right,
and pinning and following people. There has to be a plan. There has to be the SEO. There has to be a way to get those people to convert in some way, shape, or form.
And that's if they go to associationofvas.com, then they can find these people and people like them.
They can contact us. So we are just starting out. We will eventually have a directory, but they can reach out and we will make all the leads. We will make sure that we're getting the right communication strategy and the right ideal client fit down. And we will definitely be taking clients. We will also have a special for clients who want to join as members. And as members, then they can get access to the VAs and get those questions answered without having to hire someone. They need their technical questions answered. They want to know how to convert something. They want to know best practice. And then they can also help us create programs and the certifications as well. Because like I said, we need the client's input. So part of that service of being a member as a client in beta testing is not just to get things that you need and help us provide a service for you, but then also give us feedback of what is, this is great, I love this, keep going, or that doesn't really resonate with me, I don't really find that as important as this. So we are very much like, let's get the clients in here. Let's not do this without their feedback. But then let's also see what services we can provide for them that would be of value. And for those clients who just say, you know what, I just want to hire someone, then we got you too.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much, Melissa Smith, for sharing your story today.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
All right. Hang with us. One more guest. All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, Vicki Hamilton with VWH Consulting. Welcome, Vicki.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So did you learn anything in that last segment?
I sure did, and I have several questions and can't wait to talk to you after the session is over with.
You got it.
Well, Vicki, what are you up to at VWH Consulting?
Well, VWH Consulting has been in business for almost 9 years. Wow. My background is I was a senior executive in the technology realm and media and entertainment business. And subsequent to that, once I worked myself out of a job, ended up starting my own company. And VWH Consulting focuses on many different opportunities in its portfolio. One of the biggest ones happens to be under organizational change management. Because let's face it, the only thing we can count on is what?
Change. Exactly.
And no matter what we do inside of an organization or a company, there are things that we need to prepare for. In terms of getting prepared for that change, what we have to do to go through the change, and then what do we have to do after the change occurs. And one of the things VWH Consulting helps our clients do is that we really work with them to help them to understand all things affect your organization. Think about it. People you bring in and hire, they have different leadership styles. They have different ways of doing things. It's going to affect some kind of change, whether it is dealing with a merger and acquisition, whether we're dealing with new leadership, technology changes. All of these changes have an impact on an organization. And what's happened is that because this changes can be so intensive, and we have a organization of talent that is across the spectrum when it comes to all of our demographics, right? And all of our generations. So for the first time, we have four generations that are working all at one time.
In the same work, it could be in the same company.
In the same company.
But they have like one communication style or one culture that everybody's supposed to fit into?
You got it. So what happens is that what we do is we come in to help organizations when they're going through this change to develop a strategy, because communication is a foundation of any change that you do, mm-hmm. no matter what it is, not just the functional activities that have to take place within that change. And so every generation, if you look at our everything from our baby boomers, we're at the last end of the baby boomers. Not everybody has retired. Our Generation X, our millennials, and we all have heard all horror stories about millennials. Oh, my God, how do you lead them? How do you make them change, et cetera? And millennials are becoming a lot of our new leaders today mm-hmm. in terms of moving forward. And then our Generation Z that is coming to follow that. And the idea is that helping organizations understand how do I effectively lead them, how do I effectively communicate with them becomes extremely important to their success factor. And their preparation for any organizational change that they're going through. And so we help them with doing that. Now, we can help with any spectrum. If you're looking for a strategy to hire talent, what kind of talent do we need to fill a role? All the way, if you're looking for executive leadership that you want to give them additional opportunities, we do executive coaching as well. So we help with that spectrum on the talent space. When it comes to process, we help you integrate your process of that change into something that's going to be going on continuously. Mm-hmm. Because once you do a change, that's just the beginning spot.
Right. You can't just fix it and leave, right?
That's exactly right. You can't fix the change.
Because the executive read a book and then now they're implementing some new system and then they're like, this is everybody jump on board.
And we hear it all the time. Right. I remember when Jim Collins' book came out, right. You know, Good to Great, everybody was on this bandwagon.
We're on a bus.
Okay, we gotta go
okay,
do
where
this
are
good
we
way.
On the, which
right.
seat
what
are you?
Seat on the bus are you right. on, right? And how do you get onto that right seat? So as these things change and happen, you know, you have to create a strategy around mm-hmm. how you're gonna implement the roadmap and how you're gonna execute to move forward in terms of making that happen. It's interesting. I'm also on a board called Growing Leaders. And Dr. Tim Elmore, I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he is the expert when it comes to leading the next generation to be great leaders. And one of the things that he talks about is that what's so phenomenal today with these four generations that are in the workplace is you even have generations that cross over each other. Right. He has this IY generation that he talks about coming from the technology side, which is why they have the I, and then also being part of the Generation Y because they cross over each other, and talks about some of the interesting dynamics that come with that and how we have to even lead those differently. So there's subcategories. Right. So now we're talking about even how do we change this behavior? How do we lead them? How do we move forward? And these are things that companies are going to have to get prepared for, especially when you're going in to try to attract talent and retain talent in terms of moving forward in the future.
Now, is your sweet spot in technology because that's where you came from?
Yes, my sweet spot is in technology. I have done a lot in the technology realm. And actually, a lot of my change happens to be because someone asked me to come in and do some consulting around the technology arena. And in that technology, you can't talk about change of technology. I'll talk about people and other things.
Right.
So I end up going across the gamut, which is what's so fun in terms of doing that technology, whether it's a implementation of a new HRIS system, whether it's a whole new software selection process that they're going through. There's all different arenas within that technology realm that I help to facilitate the senior leaders in terms of moving forward, of building that strategy, roadmap, and execution to make it happen.
Now, technology is involved in all industries and businesses now. Is your work kind of industry agnostic as well, or do you specialize within technology within certain industries?
It's great you asked that question. We are industry agnostic. I have had clients that have been from the transportation industry to the architecture industry to dealing with organizations that specialize in brand and marketing and media and entertainment. So we go across industries in terms of moving forward.
Now, is your point of entry through executive coaching, or like what's your typical point of entry into a company?
A lot of times I get contacted because they're going to be doing some type of technology change and I'm asked to come in and
okay,
and
so they're saying,
that.
Hey, we're doing a new implementation right. of certain software.
Right. And we're looking for someone to help guide and lead us through that process.
Like kind of the general contractor. Yeah. Of that implementation?
It's the consulting area.
Yeah, right.
Really where you're doing the leadership of the consulting area. Mm-hmm. And it evolves into sometimes I get asked to do the executive coaching because of getting into the organization and people aspect of what I'm doing, or help hire the right talent to come in, or other consultants participate on that hiring panel to be able to do that. So we make sure that we get the right people in with the right skill sets and talents to do it.
Because a lot of times companies think, oh, this new software is the solution, and they invest a lot, it could be millions of dollars in the new software, but the implementation, if that's not done right, it's just you're just lighting a bunch of money on fire, right?
That's exactly what happens. So what happens is that a lot of times you'll go into organizations and say, okay, we decided we're going to implement this new HRIS system, mm-hmm. and we already got the solution. Okay?
We got it.
We've already vetted it.
Don't you worry
it.
About
don't
it.
Don't you worry about it. We got it. We got the team.
And they promised
we got the
us it's going to be easy, seamless.
User-friendly. Right. No problem. It's going to be real easy, right? And so you come in and you begin to understand exactly where they are, right? Mm-hmm. And you recognize, hey, wait a minute. You may have the software, but we don't have our strategy and roadmap as to what we want to do to implement this. And guess what? We haven't prepared the organization for the change.
So sometimes it'll be just like, surprise, next month there's going to be this.
Right.
You know how you've been doing this other thing for 5 years? We're not doing that anymore. We're doing this, the thing you have no idea what this is or you heard about.
Right, absolutely. Or we got a new leader that came in and right. that was their expertise. And right. they said, okay, we're going to bring this new software right. in because
game
that's
changer.
What
that
I was, know.
Right.
And so people...
That could be thousands of people, right? Like this could impact thousands of people and they think everybody's just going to fall in line.
Absolutely, absolutely. The entire organization,
how
right?
crazy is that? It's good job security for you, but that's like crazy, right?
Right, but I think that's what brings up the anxiety and all of that
right.
when it comes to your employees trying mm-hmm. to figure out, okay, does the top really know what they're doing? Do they have a clue as to what's
right,
going
the
on?
The bottom usually thinks they don't, right?
Exactly. And they think that because they don't understand how I do my job every
right.
day.
That
and
I
what
live
I do.
This and I'm the one talking to the customer, but you know better.
Right.
And you've never talked to my customer.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why one of the ways of being successful is we do have to have where we're working together as teams, mm-hmm. you know, and we need to understand the impact of all organizations as we continue to move forward.
So now how do you work with that when they're going to do some big implementation and they really haven't thought through how it's going to trickle down to all of the people? Do you just tell them, okay, let's pump the brakes here a little bit and let's have some chats with some of the, you know, people at all levels?
Well, there's a process. And there's a process that we put together in terms of not only talking to the executive management to understand what's the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. Why are we doing this in the first place?
Right.
How is this mapping to our business goal and our strategies of where we want to go? Everybody needs to understand that. And I don't care where you are within the organization, because that helps you to support the mission and what they're trying to do. But then you also have to speak to the areas of the process that are going to be affected by the actual implementation, mm-hmm. right, of whatever that's going to be.
Because there could be saboteurs in this mix here, right, that say, look, I'm not doing that.
And you're going to have some champions and you're going to have some naysayers, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of times, if you spend time talking to some of the naysayers, you can really get good input as to why they're feeling the way they are, and may even give you some ideas of thinking outside of the box of things you didn't consider mm-hmm. and you should consider. Now, sometimes you're going to have naysayers that just aren't going
that's
to
right.
work.
And they
right?
might have to be,
and
their
that's
future
where,
might have to be freed up.
But you know, and when you talk about freeing up the future, it doesn't necessarily mean outside the door.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you can have people who need to free from that role, but there's a new role that's
right.
created that they're more equipped and have the skill sets and competencies to actually be able to do. So I think it's important that you think holistically and not just have a narrow focus,
right?
Because they also have intellectual property about the company that you don't necessarily want to lose.
Right. And that, isn't that a trap? I think some organizations are quick to get rid of people who do have kind of that historical perspective of the company, that they're just replacing willy-nilly. And then these people that have that, I've been through three of these kind of transformations, you know, that could be valuable. Like, absolutely. And not just be thrown out the door just because they don't fit this specific one.
And I think that's the challenge when it comes to dealing with organizational change, right? Mm-hmm. When we're dealing with change and we're looking at where our most valuable asset is located, right? Our people, right?
Well, they say that. That's on everybody's mission statement. I don't know how true it is in every organization.
Well, they need to call VWH consultants so we can help them understand how potentially, not all in all cases, how potentially some of those individuals could have been placed elsewhere, right? But because we have a tendency to operate a lot in silos, we don't have a tendency to look horizontally across the organization, right? And that's not just, and you know, one of the things that I help my clients understand is a lot of times you're trying to look horizontally just within the technology organization. Guess what? There's a business organization out there too.
Right.
So they may have grown out of their capacity and capabilities within technology, but they can actually move over to the business side and be of great value.
Right. Because they're like a technology liaison.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And understand how things work. And that's where we lose focus. And why do we lose focus? I don't have time for that. Mm-hmm. We got to get this out. We got to make this happen. How much is this going to cost me?
Right.
And in the end, we spend more money because we're wasting more valuable time. We're letting more people go to that intellectual property that you talked about. And then to get somebody trained and up to speed costs us even more
money.
Right.
Because a lot of times they're making hiring and firing decisions on a spreadsheet with salary and benefits. You know, and they're just saying, well, okay, this is XX, you know, I'm just adding up and that's a million here. We got rid of that. But that may not be the best use of that $1 million.
That's exactly right. And you want to make sure that when you're dealing with budget constraints, that you're actually prioritizing what you want to spend appropriately as you're beginning to move forward. It becomes really important that, and that's why I say when you start on any initiative, why are we doing it? What's our benefit and how do we want to make this work becomes extremely important because you got to stick to that mission and priority and stick to why you're actually doing this in the first place. If we just wanted to have dollars and cents, everybody could be virtual and everybody could just have a salary and we just go and click off numbers and say, okay, you just go.
And every a company would be run by accountants.
Exactly.
It would be simple.
Right. So. But that's not real world and that's not life. So we have to make sure that that's not the case.
So if a company's going through some sort of a change or thinking about a change, to have you guys come in and put kind of fresh eyes and look at this more holistically, just to have a conversation would probably be worthwhile.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We invite conversations. We invite opportunities where we can sit down and have that discovery session and talk and understand what the challenges are and where our services can come in to help you in terms of where you're moving forward, how you're trying to get there, what your end objectives are, to actually make sure that you get an ROI at the end of the day.
And the challenge maybe you're thinking, like a leader has to be confident in bringing in somebody that's going to ask these hard questions.
That's correct. Sometimes, you know, when we're inside of an organization, a lot of times you'll see all the senior leaders get together and they're talking about what needs to be done. And when you bring that consultant come in to give a fresh idea, a fresh perspective, and to really talk about some of the things that they may not have considered, then they begin to say, okay, maybe we should at least give this a try. Now, a lot of times you get the big firms who come in, right? The big consulting firms that come in and they're going to take it from beginning to end. It's millions and millions and millions of dollars. One of the things that VWH Consulting likes to let them know is that, you know, you're more than welcome to bring in those big firms. We can partner with those firms, right? We can play a piece with them and partner with them where needed, et cetera. But sometimes to get that organization that can come in from a consulting perspective to add that focused benefit on what it is you're trying to do can be extremely valuable to the organization.
Right.
Right. And to really get into the trenches of understanding the leadership of what it's going to take, the strategy of what it's going to take to move forward. So it's not that we're against partnering. We partner with a lot of people. I've gone into organizations and had all kinds, big partners, little partners, small partners, and we worked cohesively together.
Right.
You know, in terms of making the objective happen and move forward.
Well, I would think the value of one of the values of having an independent consulting firm come in rather than these large kind of bureaucratic ones are that you are kind of getting rid of some of the groupthink that can occur in these large organizations where everybody's like, everybody's like on board and they're all saying the same thing as no one wants to get fired and wants to be on part of the team that stays, right? Mm-hmm. And you get that kind of groupthink, and where you have somebody in there that is like, look, I'm a free agent, so I'm going to just tell you the truth, and that's why you paid me.
Exactly. And that's the other thing. Groupthink can be very detrimental to an organization as they're moving forward.
Right.
And we do come in and talk to organizations about let's remove some of, and that's internally as well as externally, right? Some of the groups that are going to be affected are going to have siloed perspectives.
Right. And I got my own agenda.
And I got what I have to do, et cetera. Right. So groupthink is a dangerous thing all the way around, mm-hmm. you know, and we welcome the opportunity, you know, as an independent organization to come in because we're nimble. We can work faster. We are able to our agility, you know, in terms of working on an agile methodology of getting things done quickly over and over again and really getting to the end result we want. We're able to do that quicker.
Now, what's your feeling about the talent landscape? Like you mentioned, the multi-generations involved in the workforce, but talent is always a challenge, especially in technology, where there's in some areas of technology, you know, there's 0% unemployment or negative unemployment. Yeah, you know?
That's today, but you know, believe it or not, they say by 2027 we are really going to be in a talent shortage. Mm-hmm. And part of the challenge that we have is, you know, there are, even when you think about women, you know, as you know, I'm on the advisory board for women in technology in Atlanta, and we're trying to get more and more women into STEAM because we don't have the numbers that we need when it comes even to technology talent. But this is talent overall. Right. And so I think that what's happening is that as our talent shortage is coming up, it's going to be harder and harder to attract and retain talent if we don't start thinking about the things we do, even from a business model perspective. So let's think about it. You know, you talk about working remotely. You talk about having a little bit more of freedom when it comes to the time that I work, when I work, how I work. What does that flexibility look like? So the business models that we have today and the way our policies work are not necessarily going to be the same for tomorrow. We have a new set of thinking coming in as our younger talent is reaching our generations of being leaders, right? Think most of the millennials that I know have a side hustle. They got a second job. Right.
No matter what their first job
right. is. And the reason they do that is because they've watched parents be dedicated, go and do work, and the business say, appreciated your work,
but we
no longer need your services. Right. And they're coming in and saying, I don't want to be in that position.
Right. They don't want to be vulnerable.
And they don't want to be that vulnerable. So they have this side hustle. So when a company says, no, we're not going to change our policies, or no, we're not going to be flexible, it gives this generation to say, okay, well, I'm going to concentrate even more to what I'm doing to the side.
Right.
The second thing is about the time we work. You pay me for 8 hours of work. Right. You expect me to work 12. What's the salary thing mean? What's the salary thing mean? You work until the job gets done. That's a baby boomer thinking. Right. That you're happy to have a job and you just work until the job right. gets done. You're not going to get paid anymore. We have new ways of thinking coming in. And those things have to be adapted as we're continuing to take our organizations for growth, or we won't grow. Because we won't have the talent coming in to help us to get there. The new generations coming in that are graduating and coming in the door, they have certain expectations. Even when you think about the technology front, let's talk about technology platforms for a minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
These generations grew up with technology. They grew up with answers at their hands, right? They don't need you to come and tell me how to do something. What are they going to do? Go to Google. They're going to Google it up. They're going to go to YouTube. They're going to go find it out on their own. And then they're going to come back and tell you that what you said was not right.
Exactly.
This isn't the way it works. Here's what I've
Maybe
learned.
Maybe back in the day, that was the way it worked.
Exactly. So they're going to go get more information than what you had.
And faster
to be able to say, I'm valuable too. right? I can teach myself how to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily need this. So we're going to have to start doing our operating principles differently. We're going to have to start looking at our policies differently.
And the training.
And the training mm-hmm. differently, our investment. We're going to have to look at how we value them, how we get their input, how we have them as part of teams differently. All of that is going to have to change as we're talking about growing in the years to come, because the thinking is changing. The models are changing. The leadership is changing. The expectations are changing.
Right. And that's one of the challenges when you have these companies, like you said, multi-generation, where the people that have been around a long time are like, look, I just want to make sure I get, back in the day, there was a pension and retirement and gold watches. And the young people are like, look, I'll be here 6 months, and then I'm going to be over there for 6 months. I'm going to be over there, and then I want to travel to Thailand for a year, and then I'm going to do this. So they look at a career totally different than people from 20 years prior.
Absolutely.
Like, it's not even in the – they're not even close.
I was working with a client recently. It was really interesting, and they have a – one of their millennials who's a leader had been with the organization and wanted to get some additional professional development, and the budget was tight, and it was like, well, I'm not sure we're going to be able to send you to this particular conference right. that they wanted to go to. And he was and this particular employee said, well, what do you mean you're not going to be able to send me? I got to keep up with the latest technology and what's going on, and right. I need to go to this conference. You know, you say that you're going to invest in me. You say you want me to stay here. Mm-hmm. But if you can't give it to me, then maybe I need to think about going somewhere else where somebody's going to be able to give me the conference that I want to move forward.
Right.
And the leader was like, whoa, wait a minute. What I'm saying is that we have to think about the dollars and cents of where we're going. I can't send you to that right now. I will put it on the plan for next year. He goes, but I really want to go. And by the way, next month, I want to take a vacation, and you're going to, and I want to be able to take longer than the vacation days I have. So I'll work remotely while I'm gone.
It's 5 weeks instead of four.
So I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks instead of the two weeks you're going to pay me. But this is reality.
Right.
And this is what we're having to face.
But can you even imagine
today.
That when we were younger than having that conversation?
Not at all.
Right?
I mean, I think about how my parents, were like, you do what you're told
just
to do.
Shut up, show up.
You're supposed to be thankful that, you have a job and go in and do the very, very
best you can.
And go over and above and beyond to succeed and continue to do but also give back. Pull those that are behind you up and continue to move forward to give back. Those are the conversations I have. With my young men, my adult men today, is totally different. Mama, I've been here X number of years. I ought to be promoted. This is crazy. I need to go to the next level. I need more money. And I need to go to, I need to have this benefit, that benefit. I said, do you know how long I had to work
exactly.
to get from here to here? Mom, that was back in the day.
Yeah,
those are old days we're talking about right now.
Different world. Different rules. And that's why you need people like you around to kind of help them bridge those challenges. Because
absolutely.
It's not intuitive for the leaders of today, because they grew up in a certain time and that's how it was done. So if you're not nimble in today's world, you're going to fall behind or go out of business. I mean, it's dramatic that if you miss this, the repercussions of it are tremendous. It's literally life or death for some organizations if they get this stuff wrong.
It is. And the other thing is, we talk about technology as a foundation to everything. That's what we use, right? Everybody's going to touch technology in one way or another. And these individuals that are coming in, that are getting exposed to the latest and the greatest technologies, even those that have been there for a while, your 30s, your 40s that have been exposed and seen what's happened, they're getting to the point that if organizations are not investing in their technology and taking it forward, guess what? I'll go create my own.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go create my own app. I'll go figure out how to do this on my own.
Right.
And they step outside of the process. And then when the process isn't followed, they're like, well, I did this by doing A, B, and C. I didn't have to do that in order to make it happen.
Right.
And so companies then end up spending more money because they ended up stepping outside of the process they expected them to use than had they gone on and followed the directions of what they wanted to do and the way they wanted to do it. So we're going to have to get, you know, companies are going to have to change very quickly, because this isn't going away. It's not going to change. And these opportunities that are coming forward for these generations are tremendous, and they're creating opportunities. How many times have you heard of 11-year-olds going out and creating things for themselves? Right. People create, I mean, you think about, you know, even Mark that created, you know, from his dorm room. Right. He started this application from his dorm room, and look how big Facebook is today. Right. You know, so I just think that there are these business models and everything, the way that we used to do them, are very much going to have to change and adapt in order to be successful and have the growth that they need for years to come.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, have a more substantive conversation with you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can contact me at VickiWrightHamilton.com. That's VickiWrightHamilton.com. We would love to have an opportunity to help you.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Vicky.
And thanks so much for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Sanjay Touré. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.